I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, as Indiana students return to their schools, we're going to talk about a subject that has commanded increasing attention in recent years, campus security. We'll talk about the everyday concerns and the big threats that generate national headlines. My guests will be Walt Smith, Anderson University Chief of Security, David Briggs of Indiana University at Indianapolis Campus Police, and Chuck Hibbert, a school safety consultant. You can join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits at WFYI.org, or connecting via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news.
Support for No Limits is provided by WGU Indiana, Indiana's 8th state university. Information about earning a degree from WGU, an accredited online nonprofit university, is available at indiana.wgu.edu.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about campus security. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests today are Walt Smith, who is Anderson University's Chief of Security. Walt, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure being here.
It's good to have you here. David Briggs, who is with the Indiana University Campus Police at Indianapolis. David, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Glad you had us here today.
It's good to have you here. David, if you can probably tell, has had a previous career in radio, too. He's got the voice for it. And Chuck Hibbert, who is a school safety consultant. Chuck, welcome back to the program. We've talked with you before.
Thank you, John. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Well, I'm going to start with Walt on this one. Why don't you give me an overview? What is, we know about the school shootings and all of that, that those command a lot of attention. Let's start first, and we will talk about that, and what has to be done. But let's talk a little bit about what the biggest challenges are in providing campus security first, from your perspective.
Well, probably, from my perspective, is getting the attention of the students and making them aware that they're in a different environment. As a freshman coming into a university, there's things that they're going to be exposed to that are brand new. They're going to be put in a residence hall where there's new people, new faces. They tend to be very trustworthy, and for the most part, that they're not disappointed, but there are times that those problems develop. The challenge is making the students aware of that they do have campus safety available upon at a time when they're needed. So it's, right now for me, when freshmen come in, we give an orientation and try to make an impact.
What do you say to them during that orientation?
Basically, it's just an overview of the services that we provide, being watchful. We introduce the fact that we have had tragedies around the world in the United States with active shooters. We have a video we show the students. We talk briefly about that. But mainly we talk about all the services from escorts to safe havens on our campus, walking in groups, just common sense things that they've been told all their lives. But now it becomes even more meaningful when they get out on their own.
And David, you're at a very urban campus, obviously, in Indianapolis. What are the biggest challenges that you face in the IUPUI campus?
Well, some of our biggest challenges, like you say, being in an urban environment, we have all sorts of people that come through the campus because we also have the hospitals out there on the campus. So along with the students, we have visitors to the hospitals. Campus like ours tends to draw the homeless sometimes, and finding refuge in some of the buildings. So we have to make the students there aware that they're going to have to be aware of their surroundings, because it's not a typical college campus. UPUI is more of a city within a city, and you have people working there. You have the strangers that come through when they're getting off work. And
then you do things also like have Olympic trials periodically.
We have Olympic trials, swim trials, track meets, and with the new soccer team, pro soccer team being developed here in Indy, I'm sure we're going to be using our soccer field there too as well.
And Chuck Hibbert, maybe you can give us an overview. I mean, how have the challenges of providing school and campus security changed over, say, the past 20 years?
Well, it was interesting, John, that Walt and Dave and I were just talking about before we came in here today, just as we were waiting downstairs, is how things have changed in the college, university, and even the non-traditional post-secondary educational environment, and the growth that has happened. And there's requirements these two gentlemen have to deal with, complying with the Clery Act, as it's called, that affects all colleges and universities.
What is the Clery Act?
I should probably let Walt or Dave talk about that, since they both have to deal with that on a daily basis.
Walt, how about if you tell me what the Clery Act is real quickly?
Well, back in the 1980s, there's a young lady that was going to school in Pennsylvania, and there was rapes in the community, mm-hmm. and unfortunately, this person got into the residence hall and went to her room, raped and killed her. As a result of it, the parents sued the university, and collected a large sum of money, and went to Congress and demanded that all colleges be required to report crimes that occur on or near their campus and make students aware. And as a result of that tragedy, all campuses that have resident halls or students are required to report to the federal government and to their students once a year. There's a Clery report that goes out to all the students talking about all the crimes that occurred the year before. But this is an annual report and information that has to be given to the students every year. And it's an eye-opener, because it not only talks about all the crimes, it talks about all the good services that are available to students, such as safety programs, services that are provided to the students, escorts, mm-hmm. and right on down the line.
And I'm presuming with this yearly report that there is some differentiation, that you don't have to report expired parking meters or things like that. It's more crimes against persons.
It's the major crimes, from murder to theft of vehicles, assaults.
So crimes against property,
right.
and person.
Mm-hmm.
We are talking about campus security here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Anyhow, Chuck, we got a little diverted. How has it changed over the past 25 years? That was valuable information about the Clery Act, but there are other ways it's changed too.
Well, indeed it has, John, and I think one of the very good things that has happened is the increased professionalism that we've seen in the college and university field. Requirements for officers being certified, police officers being certified, and Indiana Academy graduates, the same as any other police officer that you would encounter. And I just think that has helped improve the overall image of campus police and security as much as anything. And I think it's just a realization also that anything that happens on the street of your community can also happen on your child, son, daughter's college campus as well. And I think one of the things that Walt said in regards to how they reach out to their students is very important. And I think we've done a better job of bringing students into the fold, helping them to understand what their responsibilities and how they can access the services, because it is a growing area.
What is the biggest headache right now that you have in regard to providing campus security? I'll throw that one to David Briggs. I mean, what's the thing that is the toughest nut to crack?
The toughest nut to crack, I think, is with our campus, is just making our students aware that it's a common sense issue to remain safe. A lot of them are very naive. I go out and give presentations to incoming students, and also including the faculty and staff upon request, to just give them safety tips on what they can do to protect themselves from becoming a victim of any type of crime, be it a crime against person or a crime against property, which most of our crimes out there on the campus are crimes against property.
What sort of things do you tell them when you say you give them safety tips?
Safety tips such as when you're going to and from class, walk with, like you have authority, like you know what you're doing. Be aware when you approach your vehicle, look at it on the way there, have your keys out in your hand. If you get that uh-oh feeling that something's not quite right, mm-hmm. and that's usually that gut instinct, and that first gut instinct usually is the right decision, go the other way. We have emergency phones on campus, roughly 239 e-phones, as we call them, that you can press. It will call directly into our communications center. And if you feel that something's not quite right, and I urge them to don't be embarrassed if it's something that really isn't anything, because it could have been. We're going to respond. We will be there within a couple of minutes or less. We have a fairly sized force of 55 sworn personnel on all three shifts as a total, about 10 on each shift. And just trying to get them to understand that safety is just a common sense issue. If you have a problem, we're there to help. We offer escort services.
Walt, I'm gonna take that in a slightly different direction for you. What consumes the bulk of your time then in terms of providing campus security? Where does most of the energy and the work have to go?
We provide an awful lot of services to our students and faculty staff. The bulk of our time is working with the students. If they have, they lock their keys in the car, we go in and lock the keys. If they need to be let in, we go there and let the student into the residence hall if they need that assistance. If they need an escort, if they feel unsafe, we'll go pick them up and take them from point A to point B. If they have a question about a vehicle breakdown or something, we'll go there and provide assistance. It's mostly services, but we're there also for the times when it's a tragedy or let's say there's a theft. Fortunately, we don't have a serious number or serious problems with theft, but they do occur. To reinforce the message I try to get across to the students is the fact that they are now responsible for themselves. They don't have their parents looking over their shoulders. They're making decisions, and we want them to make good decisions. And that's not only locking your door and leaving your room and going down there. It's choosing friends wisely when you go to a party. Be sure you're going to be in the right environment or something may happen that you never thought of. So it's those learning curves that we want to get them through without having a bad experience.
We are talking about campus security here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Ryan, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Ryan, yes, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hi. I was more or less wondering what kind of training in Indiana police have when interacting with student bodies, either as individuals or en masse. I attended Michigan State University, which is, of course, the best university in the Big Ten.
We're not going to start those kinds of arguments here, Ryan.
There's no argument, but one of the issues we had was we would have annual group meetings. One was called Cedar Fest, or after big basketball games that tended to turn into riots. And this would be every 2 years. And we're talking tear gas, flash grenades, sting grenades, these kind of things. And a lot of that has been scrutinized through Michigan media that it was provocated by the police, the way that they would react to the mass gatherings. How does that work in Indiana? Are there any models that help them deal with these kind of situations?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Ryan. Thanks. Well, I'll throw that one first to David Briggs. The jump-off question is, what kind of training do campus police get? Is it different in any way from other law enforcement officials trainings?
No, it isn't. We go to the Indiana Law Enforcement Academy out in Plainfield. It's just like any other police officer within the state. Some agencies have their own academy, but the bulk of police training for most, or if not all, of the agencies is at the police academy out in Plainfield, and we all receive the same training.
Are there challenges that, in just a couple of seconds, well, I'll tell you what, we'll pick that up after the break. We are talking about campus security here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Walt Smith, David Briggs, and Chuck Hibbert. You're listening to No Limits. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us.
No Limits is made possible by your membership and by Mattress World, offering brand names like Serta, Sealy, Simmons, and Tempur-Pedic, with 8 Indianapolis area locations, including Carmel and Noblesville, or online at mattressworldindiana.com. And by Delivra, helping businesses and organizations execute email marketing campaigns with dynamic software and professional services. More information at delivra.com. The weather is brought to you by Barrington Jewels, located at East 82nd Street at Clearwater Crossing. For this afternoon, mostly sunny skies, a high today around 75, mostly cloudy for this evening, a low of 54, and partly sunny on Friday with a high of 78 degrees. To call into No Limits this afternoon, the toll-free number is 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. You can email nolimits@wfyi.org. We're on Facebook and Twitter at WFYI.
Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about campus security. My guests are Walt Smith, who is Anderson University's chief of security, David Briggs, who is with the Indiana University Campus Police at Indianapolis, and Chuck Hibbert, who is a school safety consultant. Right before we went to the break, we got a great call, a couple of great questions from a listener named Ryan, one of which was, you know, are there different, is the training for campus police different than other kinds of police officers? And David said no, but I think the even more fascinating part of Ryan's question and call was, are there specific sets of circumstances or different kinds of training that campus police need or that they should get? Walt, I'll throw that one to you.
Yes, to a large degree. One thing I might point out, not all colleges have police departments. Mm-hmm. Anderson University, we have a police department, and we also use security officers, which are semi-professional officers that we provide some training to, but not all the officers have the same type of training when you compare security and police. I have found that it takes a special type of police officer to be a campus police officer. We've hired retired officers, and they just don't have the right mindset to deal with students and to deal with the questions that students come up with.
Such as?
Well, they challenge every decision you make. Why can't I do this? Why can't I park in this location? Why, can't I, you know, whatever. But it's really fascinating to know that and fun to deal with students when they have questions if you're in the mindset you can take time and talk to them. We have a parking policy, and that has evolved from a very rigid program to pretty much made a lot of changes to accommodate the different needs around campus. And
yeah,
so
campus parking on every college campus is the flashpoint. I mean, that's the one where
if I could give up parking, I'd be the most liked person on campus because we provide lots of nice services. Our officers are also EMTs. So when we go, we have over 120 medical calls average a year. So we not only do a lot of nice things for them, but when they're in a critical situation, you know, we'll come there and help. I just finished putting on a program for the Campus Law Enforcement Association on a CPO program, which is Campus Protection Officers Course. And we had a one-week program for security officers, and that focused on services, protection, self-defense, autism, mentally ill folks, Asperger's, sexual assaults, domestic violence, just a lot of the things that occur and that you're exposed to in the campus environment.
So it's almost like intervention services in addition to...
Suicide intervention was one of the programs that
being,
we provided.
Yeah, to being law enforcement, it's like, okay, how do we turn this situation around rather than how do we just prevent a crime?
Right. We're in a position to identify a problem, and fortunately, most campuses have resources available to redirect. But the most important thing we do is to identify, document, and pass that information on, and so that particular individual can receive the support and assistance. And with counseling services and medical staff and student life services, with counselors in resident hall and student assistants, we can kind of mentor and monitor students that are in stressful situations.
We are talking about campus security here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, I think the other thing, dynamic I would like to get here is, in terms of does it change things, and I guess I should say, Chuck, I know you're a former police officer. Have the other two of you, Walt and David, have you worked outside of campus policing and other law enforcement? Walt, you're nodding your head. David, nope. I'm going to throw this question to Chuck and Walt then, and they're from. Does it make it different that when you're dealing with students, you're also dealing with people who, in addition to possibly being potential offenders or whatever, either are paying tens of thousands of dollars to be there or their parents are paying tens of thousands of dollars to be there? I would think that creates a slightly different dynamic. Chuck, you're nodding your head, so I'm going to throw it to you first.
Well, and one of the things I'd say, John, is what we're talking about here is about officer training and sensitivity to their specific environment.
So diplomacy is important.
Yeah, well, absolutely. It's critical, I think, for any police officer. But I think more so when you're in a campus environment and dealing with the type of student I'm thinking about. I also work in a K-12 environment. I'm thinking about some of my private school clients. And you get into those circumstances mm-hmm. where I think any successful police officer has to be a good communicator. I think a successful campus police officer must be an excellent communicator, and you have to be and part of that is also being a good listener. And I think those are skills and that have to be developed because so many police officers, and this isn't a criticism of the Indiana Law Enforcement Academy training at all, but one of the things that needs to be expanded, in my opinion, is just the fact that officers need to be better listeners because we're not natural-born listeners. And I think oftentimes we escalate circumstances and events, whereas the desired result is to de-escalate those circumstances. So I think that is one of the things that when I'm working with my clients and we're talking about whether it's a security officer or a police officer, that selection process and then the additional specialized training that I think is critical for the college, university, K-12 environment is that addition to what everybody receives. I think college and university officers have to be better.
What do I'm going to stay with you for a second, Chuck, and I should invite our listeners to join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. You've talked about the specialized training. I want to talk a little bit about to be a campus police officer. Build me the ideal campus police officer, security person. What sort of training should that person have?
Well, I think I think, first of all, the officer must have the same skills as any other police officer in the state of Indiana. So when Dave talks about everybody being going to the Indiana Law Enforcement Academy, with the exception of a couple agencies here in the state, yes, I think that is the basis. I think then each environment is somewhat different. I suspect that things that are done by the Indiana University Police at Indianapolis and how they're done in Anderson will probably be different simply based upon the culture and the climate. And so you have to, that's the reason why I'm not a big advocate of a template form of, you know, here's our curriculum, here's how we train our officers. Might give you a footprint of where to look, what to look at, but the reality is that you do have to develop those things within your own culture and climate. But I think the most important thing, as you would in any business environment, in any environment, is you've got to have that communication piece in place, and you have to understand who your clients are and who you're providing services to.
And you mentioned also, you made a differentiation between campuses and K through 12. What ways are the security challenges different for, say, college campuses, university campuses, and then high schools, junior highs, middle schools, elementary schools?
Well, the first is the 24/7 environment. With dorms, students on campus, and other adults. And so that 24/7 environment is the first significant difference. I think also the fact that one of the challenges at K-12 is that you are, in fact, dealing with preschoolers, 3- and 4-year-olds, and there are some unique issues involving providing care for those age children. But you also, in many colleges and universities, you have daycare, and so you have those same, may not necessarily be the daily focus, but they are part of the environment. And so they're really, while there are differences in K-12 and colleges and university, there aren't that many differences.
Chuck, thank you very much for that. David, you were saying that you go out and interact pretty frequently with folks on the campus.
That's correct.
What is the biggest misconception or misperception that people have about what the campus police do?
That we're not real police.
How do you address that?
We explain to them that we are real police. We're certified by the state of Indiana, and we have the same powers as any other police officer in the state. And if you do the crime, you'll do the time.
We've gotten a question from a listener who didn't want to go on the air. Just wanted to know, is the pay comparable for campus police as to other law enforcement agencies? Walt?
I would like for it to be the comparable. Our officers have a higher expectation. They seem to work harder. I'm more selective. When I was on the city police, I was assistant chief for 8 years and in position to hire officers. But unfortunately, there is a significant difference.
How significant?
Probably 30%.
So 30% less for campus police?
Mm-hmm.
Why did you make the move?
Why did I make the move?
Yeah. I'm just curious. Why did you go from that law? There had to be some reason. I'm not asking your compensation wages
true.
Or anything, but I would think, obviously, law enforcement is a passion for you. What prompted you to decide you wanted to do campus policing instead of?
Well, at the time I could retire, I could start drawing from my pension, which would offset the difference in pay, and then which accumulated to more than what it would have been on my previous
position.
So
it was a
step up.
Cumulative effect,
right?
Here, that it was a way to do that. David, what drew you to campus policing?
Well, I was a student in Bloomington at the time. I had several friends on the department, and it was, at the time, just the job. I needed a job when I got out of school, and I had talked to several friends. One is actually my former chief. He was a real good friend of mine, and even my current chief, who's also a real good friend, talking with him, I thought, well, yeah, this is something I could do. And as time went on, I became more involved with what I was doing, more passionate about the job and dealing with the students, since I had several friends that thought, oh, you're the man now. You're the man. I liked communicating with them, and I could get to more people being a police officer than just being just a regular student, because you run into more people just because of the fact of the occupation.
What's the hardest thing about being a campus police officer? Walt, I'll start with you on that one.
Well, for a small department, in my position, I have to do all the jobs. Mm-hmm. And so you can, about the time you get something finished, you have to start on another project. So it's trying to accomplish a lot of things that you never have time to do it the way you really want to do it. So you just put a lot of hours and energy. When I first went to the university after retiring from the city police department, I was working until midnight. First couple of years, I was putting in 3 months of documented overtime. Of course, you don't get reimbursed for that. So it was just finding enough time to get things back on track.
Colleges and universities take that not-for-profit thing very seriously.
Yeah, and the resources available to the department. A lot of campuses don't sense the urgency that you need to have all the equipment that a regular department would have. Fortunately, Anderson University has done an excellent job. We don't have enough people, but our resources are very good.
And David, what's the hardest thing for you?
I suppose the hardest thing for me is just getting out and getting to meet the people. People have a misconception of what the police officer, at least on our campus, we're not the Gestapo, and we're there to help. As Walt was saying earlier, we have a lot of services that we provide. We're just not there to show up every time some sort of crime is committed or somebody is a victim. We want to get out and know the people, let them get to know us. I tell everybody that I run into, if you see one of us on the street there, walk up and say hi. Mm-hmm. Strike up a conversation. We stress to our officers to make contact with the students, with the staff and faculty, just so they know who we are and where they can find us, and if they need help for anything, not just for a criminal issue, give us a shout. We're more than happy to show up. So I guess the hardest thing would be just trying to convince people that we're just like they are.
We are talking about campus security here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can do what these two listeners did. You can connect with us via Twitter or Facebook at WFYI. One listener says, presumably to you guys, hats off to you. A tough job indeed to find a balance when problems happen. And then from Bruce says, ugh, I couldn't imagine. I still have nightmares from my single semester as a resident assistant. Well, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, we now live in a world in which, you know, the possibility of campus shootings and big disasters, you know, now is a reality. Chuck, I'm going to throw it to you first to give us kind of an overview. When those really started exploding, you know, 15 years ago or so, what kind of a wake-up call did that provide for campus security? How did that change things in sort of a larger perspective? And then we'll go to Walt and David for the ways it changed things on their campuses.
Well, I think the school shootings, whether they were K-12 or in the Virginia Tech situation, is just an example. It's certainly been Northern Illinois and many others, unfortunately. But I think what it does is what it accomplished was, as I mentioned earlier, it caused administrators to take a serious look at what they were doing on campus. This is a poor analogy, but it's the one that immediately came to mind, is that campus and university law enforcement has moved from the Barney Fife era to a level comparable with any other law enforcement agencies in their community. And I think that's the biggest change that's come about. And I think it's also important to see when you have an event that occurs on campus and requires the resources from the community, that in fact the university police are the lead agencies in many of these circumstances, and such as IMPD, they play a support role when responding to campus events. So I think that's really, and so it's not so much, well, we're going to come in and take over, as much now as we're going to lend our resources to support.
We collaborate.
Yes,
we
absolutely.
Collaborate. We are talking about campus security here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Anderson University Chief of Security Walt Smith, David Briggs, the Indiana University Police at Indianapolis, and Chuck Hibbert, a school safety consultant. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about campus security. My guests are Walt Smith, who is Anderson University's chief of security, David Briggs, who is with the Indiana University Campus Police at Indianapolis, and Chuck Hibbert, who is a school safety consultant. We've gotten a question from Laura via Twitter. Says, what are some specific suggestions to make students more aware of their surroundings and promote safety? I'll throw that one to Walt.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, to begin with, it would be the way that we do it. I have a brief time with all the freshmen when they come in, and I try to open their eyes a little bit about campus safety and the reasons we provide services, and discuss what programs we have and how to report crimes, and the importance of the resident hall assistants and directors, and contacting police if they see something happening. We try to ask students to become part of the community and take on the responsibility of a partner, and to let someone know if there's a problem or a safety problem. The resident hall staff, the RAs and RDs, we call them, spend time and they talk about campus safety, and they give them a tour. We have safe havens at Anderson University. It's a little different than most campuses, where late at night, if a student feels threatened, we have 13 locations around campus that are called safe havens. And what a safe haven is at night when a building is locked, usually there's an airlock, there's two doors, the outside door is left unlocked, the inside door is locked. The simple safe haven, you can walk in and use a thumb lock to turn to lock yourself in. There's a telephone and directions on how to contact campus safety. The most sophisticated one is in our student center, where there's a camera. There's two buttons, one red, one green. You press a button, it locks magnetically, locks the outside doors. It sends a message to the officer through an email stating that somebody has activated that alarm. There's a telephone there, plus there's a camera recording what's going on. So we have those around campus. Those are introduced to our students who are up late at night walking from point A to point B. And we have blue light phones. The reality is these things aren't used hardly at all, if any, but it's a safety image. It tells the students that we're safety-minded, that there are issues, or we wouldn't have these programs available. So we're trying to set a mindset that if something did happen, you have resources and direction to go for assistance.
We are talking about campus security here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hi, guys. Thank you. I was a student at Indiana University. I graduated a little over a year ago, and in my final semester, just for a regular class I had to get out of the way, I took a health class. And in that class, they had a police officer came in and talked to the class, and he was a retired state police officer, did a lot of time undercover with motorcycle gangs, things like that, and talked about how sometimes his job was to actually trap people that were trying to sell drugs on campus. Apparently, certain kids would go online and try to use forums to sell prescription drugs like Adderall and whatnot during, you know, cramps for studies, for tests, things like that. And my question is, how important do you think it is to allocate the time and funds of officers to go out on these hunts like that when there are obviously more important issues to be tackled, I guess, on campus?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Chris. We'll try to get you an answer. I'll throw that one, I'll start since he mentioned IU. I'll throw that one to David.
We haven't had that problem on our campus up here. We haven't tried to trap anyone in a situation such as the caller mentioned. We do have plainclothes officers that we'll put out on the street, but it's mainly dealing with the property theft, such as bicycles or car break-ins or vending machines. But that particular incident or situation that this caller was talking about, evidently it happened on the Bloomington campus, and I'm unaware of that particular incident. But up here, we don't try to trap anyone
Okay. We've gotten an email question from a listener named Stephanie, and if, like Stephanie, you would like to ask a question by email, you can do so by sending it to nolimits@wfyi.org. Her question is, good afternoon. I am a senior at IUPUI, and I have a question for Mr. Briggs. My question concerns the gun threat on campus this past spring. I was in the main campus center that day, and I remember there was absolutely no organization when it came to locking down the campus. There was no authority figure, just people walking around telling students to seek shelter. I also remember that there were about 3 text message phone call reports total in the 4 hours we were on lockdown. I mainly got my information from the news. Finally, I remember hearing that the first text message phone call alert was sent out half an hour after the initial report of the gunman was made. Could you please address if any changes have been made to the system on campus so that there is more organization and more alerts sent out if another event were to happen on campus? Probably ought to tell people, for those who don't realize, this past spring there was an alarm at one point. Somebody thought someone saw a person walking toward one of the IUPUI buildings with something long that might have been a weapon, and the campus went into a lockdown for, was it about 4 hours, David?
Well, first of all, let me start off saying the campus did not go into a lockdown. There's no way you can lock down a campus of that size. Usually the term lockdown has come from, and I think Chuck will agree with me here, a freestanding like elementary school where you can lock down the exits and entrances. In order to lock down something like IUPUI, you'd have to close off streets several blocks away. And you cannot lock down. That was a term used by the media. I've got nothing against the media.
It's okay.
But that was a term that was used, and it was not locked down. We sent out the text messages of what was going on to seek shelter. We can't hold anybody there and tell them that they can't leave. All we can do is advise them to either seek shelter or, if they're receiving text messages and they aren't on campus, to stay away. Each building was searched building by building by the officers as far as being unorganized. If a person's not familiar with emergency operations, it may look unorganized to them. But we had an EOC set up, which is the Emergency Operations Center. I wasn't there that day, but I am familiar with what was going on. It was a unified command with other agencies involved, the state police, the FBI, IMPD. So everything was under control. And like I said, each building was searched one by one. And some people would hear officers say, you know, this building's clear. They would assume that it was giving the all clear. No, that was not the all clear. It was just that particular location had been checked, and nothing was found. The young lady that called in that incident saw a gentleman open his trunk. He had a rifle in the trunk. She did what she was supposed to do. She made herself safe, and then she contacted us. We have a video, as Walt said, that we show on Active Shooter, which I don't give the presentation on that. We let a firearms instructor do that. But the advice I can give from that tape, if a situation like that arises, the three things we tell people to do, the number one is run. If you can take some people with you, run. The next thing, if you can't run, hide. Make yourself safe, hide. Lock a door, turn out the lights, silence your cell phone. The next one, and that's it's if all else fails, is fight. If you have to fight, you're fighting for your life, do what you can to take out that shooter. But like I say, I'm not qualified to give too much information on that. I'm not a firearms instructor, but things were done in a very organized. We learned some things. Some things were
since what did you learn from that experience?
We learned that we're going to have to get the information out, I guess, more concisely, because people misinterpret. Like I say, when the building, they said the building was clear. They assumed that it was an all-clear given, and that just meant that the building was clear. So we're going to make sure that people understand what they're saying. We have PIOs, which I am, which is a public information officer. We're responsible for getting the information out correctly to the media when the media is requesting information. So we're working on making sure the proper information has gotten out, and just not from some the man on the street, because the media will do interviews on people that they can stop and talk to.
How much, Chuck Hibbard, how much of that communication piece, how important is that in dealing with situations like this where, you know, in this case, thankfully it turned out to be a false alarm on the IUPUI campus, but all too tragically, that has not always been the case in this country. And, you know, I would assume, you know, that in that case, you got a lot of scared people. You got scared parents. You've got everybody wanting to know something. How important is it to be able to inform people?
Well, next to providing for immediate safety of those who are in harm's way, the communication piece is the second most important thing. You can oftentimes you can handle an event very well from a operational standpoint, but you may not have communicated it as effectively, and so therefore you're judged harshly, not on the facts of how the operation was handled, but on the fact of how well you communicated your message. And I think it is it's a tremendous challenge, and particularly when you're dealing with the emotional aspects that always accompany
high stress,
absolutely
high stress,
and how that impacts people's comprehension. And so it's oftentimes, as we know, in those circumstances, you have to repeat the basic message time and time again. And we're also in that period, John, of instant knowledge, instant communication, and I think one of the things that people need to understand is that as these events, they unfold, information sometimes isn't communicated because you're in a tactical circumstance, and getting that information back to a PIO or to the media may not always happen in a timely fashion because there are other priorities. But it does, as I said, oftentimes just that communication piece breakdown, or not as effectively as anyone would like, often then turns out in the public perception as something has failed.
I want to pick up the other, yeah, David.
And one other thing, as Chuck was mentioning here, at Twitter, the social media, Facebook, a lot of people jump on that and take that particular information that they see on there as gospel. And most of the time, it's the wrong information, but that's what they run with.
Well, I guess where I'm going with this is the other piece of Stephanie's question was the central authority figure speaking. to it. Is it important to get somebody out there pretty quickly saying, I'm going to be the source of the accurate information here. Don't, you know, in any crisis, let's take it away from the school shootings, because those are real, pulling a lot of hot button issues in other areas. But say there's, a natural disaster, a tornado hits campus or something like that. Walt, do you guys have a plan in place, since we all are in the tornado alley, in place so that someone is out there saying, okay, this is what happened. Don't focus on social media or other stray reports. This is what we know for sure.
Yes, this is, all of us go through the incident command system, which designates a person, public information person, to handle all the questions. So you just don't get it from every officer on duty. I wanted to add, during the conversation concerning the shootings or potential shootings, the thing that most campuses are beginning to do is go through exercises. Mm-hmm. Last March, we had a campus lockdown exercise. Our campus is small enough, and we have building managers and keys and magnetic doors where we can actually lock down the entire campus. And we send out emails to students about what to expect, what the responsibilities are, to view this shots fired on campus video and to ask questions prior to the drill. We send it to faculty staff. We send it to building managers, telling them about their responsibilities. Then following the exercise, we had a meeting. And even prior to that, we had tabletop exercises. This fall, in addition to our tornado drills and fire drills, we're going to have a campus lockdown exercise. When you go through this and students become aware of what they can do and what takes place and how it's handled, they're not going to, they still need information, but they begin to understand their responsibilities and how they can protect themselves.
And this is a fascinating area. Chuck, I'm going to throw this one to you because it's a larger kind of question and frankly might keep these guys from getting in trouble with other people they work with on campus. As a college teacher myself, there have been times I've seen, stuff that students have written or said in class that raises some red flags. We're dumping all of the campus security responsibility here on these guys. Are there ways that, say, faculty and staff members who aren't law enforcement officials should be trained to recognize some danger signs?
Absolutely. And I think one of the latest trends is becoming more and more aware of threat assessment. One of the challenges that colleges and universities, of course, have, as opposed to my K-12 clients, is they're dealing with all adults. Mm-hmm. So you have...
Well, in theory.
Yes. Well, in theory. And legally and age-wise, yeah, for the most part. And so we get into all of the rights that students have, being 18-year-olds and older. So it is one of those, that threat assessment piece and bringing in community partners for mental health aspects and just coordinating. And in too many places, we've not done that very, very good job of inviting in other partners to help us with these circumstances.
This has been a fascinating conversation. I'd like to thank all of you for joining me. I'd like to thank Walt Smith, Anderson University Chief of Security. Walt, thank you for spending this time with us.
It's been interesting and fun.
It has been. It has been a fascinating conversation. David Briggs, who is with the Indiana University Police at Indianapolis, Campus Police at Indianapolis. David, thank you for spending this time with us.
Thank you for having me. It's been my pleasure.
And it has been good to talk with you. And Chuck Hibbert, who is a school safety consultant. Thank you for coming back and talking with us again.
I look forward to the next time, John.
I look forward to talking with you as well. Also like to thank our listeners for spending this time with us. We will be back next week when we'll be talking about more topics of interest to the people of Indianapolis and Indiana. I am John Krall. Have a great weekend. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Allseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.